It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. After months of conversation and anticipation, the election is over, and Donald Trump is returning to the White House.
It's time to put the divisions of the past 4 years behind us. It's time to unite. And we're going to try. We have to try. And it's going to happen. Success will bring us together. I've seen that.
Unifying rhetoric from the same man who, 6 days earlier, was saying this.
On day one, I will launch the largest deportation program in American history. I will rescue every city and town that has been invaded and conquered, and we will put these vicious and bloodthirsty criminals in jail or kick them the hell out of our country and fast.
I'm joined now by our Washington correspondent, Linda Kenyon, to talk through what just happened, why Vice President Kamala Harris lost, and what we might expect from President-elect Donald Trump. Hello, Linda. How's your week going?
Hello. To say it's been busy would be a mild understatement.
We live in interesting times. That is the way it goes these days. All right. We are still, relatively speaking, in the early stages of figuring out what happened, why it happened. There are already many, many interpretations out there of what led to Trump's fairly resounding victory, at least for the modern era. Of all that chatter, which ideas have stuck with you the most?
It seems that this became an election that really shed the a spotlight on gender differences, the gender gap, that the ability to get the message across did not so much matter as the style mattered. And if we had, for example, a study in contrast with Donald Trump and his very aggressive rhetoric and sound bites that seemed to really latch on to a majority of the American voting public, especially among men, a lot of aggressive masculinity in the statements. And we had on the other side, Kamala Harris, who was trying to present reasoned arguments, logic, and facts that were not either being listened to or just simply not being taken, not taking hold. The gender gap to me was the most startling. And then when you couple that with race,
let me just put some numbers on what you just said there, and then I'll ask you to continue. Sorry to interrupt, but the gender gap. I'm looking at exit poll here on the CNN website. Almost 23,000 respondents. So this is a huge survey. 50 male vote, 55-42 Trump. Female vote, 53-45 Harris. So almost exact inverses, but stronger male support for Trump. Strong, but not quite as strong, female support for Harris.
Right. And when you look at the male versus female vote, it was very interesting when breaking it down according to race. Latino men voted in much greater numbers for Donald Trump than were expected, especially after last week's comments by the Trump campaign and surrogates that were very derogatory against Latino men. Puerto Rico, in general, Latino, not just derogatory against Puerto Rico men, but and Latino men, but men and
the
women.
Comedian, yeah, making the comment about Puerto Rico being an island of garbage at the Trump rally. Yes,
right. And the backlash from that was swift, and it was very aggressive. And we had women. In particular, Latino women, very, very upset, celebrities very upset, and the groundswell of outcry over those remarks did not, however, carry through in the polls on election night when we saw, yes, there were some Latino women who voted for Donald Trump, but Latino men in particular searched for Donald Trump. And that was a bit of a surprise.
So there have been a lot of people trotting out hobby horses about why Harris lost. We heard Bernie Sanders, the freshly reelected Vermont senator who twice failed to win the Democratic nomination for president. He put out a statement Wednesday saying the party has, quote, abandoned working class people. Jamie Harrison, the Democratic Party chairman, responded by calling Sanders' statement straight up BS. I am trying to differentiate between people who have strong priors and see this outcome as validating their concerns. Bernie's one. People who think Democrats focus too much on LGBT, especially T rights, is another. I'm trying to keep those people separate in my mind from others who are genuinely trying to understand what happened. I'm trying to remain agnostic until we get more detailed voter data. That's going to be months. How are you thinking through how this should affect your coverage in the future?
Well, for those of us who cover Congress in the White House, we are tasked with a job. I once had a mentor say to me, you just put on your news shield, you do what you have to do, and then you think about it later. And that's what we have to do. We have to cover what the Republicans say. We have to cover what the Democrats say. We have to provide reasoned and informed coverage. And it does not matter if the president of the United States continues to dabble in factual half-truths or untruths. We have to report what he says. Now, that's how we started when Donald Trump was the president the first time. But we have learned quite a bit since then, and we have learned to fact-check. That may be very upsetting to the true red supporters of Donald Trump, but fact-checking is, of course, part of our job. And we are flawed individuals, but we will do what we can to try to present the news in a fair and reasoned way, and in a way that presents the facts, as well as in contrast, perhaps, to what the president, now president-elect, will say. Some of the things he has said in his campaign may or may not come to pass. For example, he will solve the problem, the war against Russia's war against Ukraine, that even before he takes office, other pledges that he will deport millions of undocumented immigrants. He doubled down on that just yesterday, saying, yes, it will be expensive, but it doesn't matter how much it costs. Well, you know, we'll have to see how he goes about that and if he's able to fulfill the campaign promises that he offered. A lot of them very lofty promises, a lot of them sound bites meant to tug at the heartstrings and the emotions that may never come to pass or may quite frankly be impossible to pass. However, he does now have buy-in from the Senate, which is Republican controlled, and the House, which is most likely Republican controlled. So it might be a little bit easier for him this time to fulfill some campaign promises that he could not in the first term when he was president of the United States. I seem to have lost you.
I'm here. I'm talking.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I don't know what, maybe a little technological glitch in our studio setup. I don't know. Sorry. Let me, sorry if you were hearing radio silence there. I lost my
mind. I was, actually.
All right. So what I was saying is you made the, last I remember, you made the point that, you know, the President-elect Trump will have a more willing Congress coming in to work with him this time around.
Yes.
And it's true. Not only will he have majorities in both the House and the Senate, but fewer of the people who opposed him. A party much more aligned with his values and his style. But that's in a couple of months. Congress is back in Washington next week for a lame duck session. How does this election change the dynamics of what needs to happen in the very short term?
Well, it changes the dynamics quite a bit. In President Biden's speech to his address to the nation yesterday, he did say that there's still more than 70 days left in the administration, and there's a lot on the to-do list. And during that time, there will also be the transition, the peaceful transition of power, one of the hallmarks of our democratic process, that he reached out to former now president-elect Donald Trump and pledged cooperation and help in securing this peaceful transition of power, and did say that he praised Vice President Harris for the campaign that she ran. And yes, they may have wished a different outcome. They did, in fact, wish a different outcome, but the people have spoken, and this is part of the process. Between now and the inauguration, which he will be attending, there were some questions which were shot down very early, by the way, before the election, before Election Day. The president will attend the peaceful transition of power, a symbol, the very symbol, which is the inauguration. Now, some of the things that he wants to do between now and then are things that are already in play. Fund the federal government, pass the National Defense Authorization Act, try to surge aid to Ukraine, which may be seeing a very different picture from the United States with Donald Trump as president as opposed to the current administration, and also try to negotiate an end to the war in Gaza with a release of the American hostages. So that's a pretty big to-do list in the next, 73 days, I believe. But those are some of the things that are going to be going on. The transition teams are already talking. There is a very detailed, prescribed process for transitioning, and that is underway. And MOUs, which we were talking about in the White House yesterday, which stands for Memorandums of Understanding, are to be signed for things such as the Office of Personnel Management and the General Services Administration, and more to come, including the Justice Department, et cetera. So it's a very detailed process. It's getting underway, and we will be keeping people informed as that process continues.
You know, I want to pause on that point, assuming you can hear me this time around. I want to pause.
Yes.
Great. I want to pause on that point because you said this is a process that's prescribed, it's standard, it's how it always, you didn't say this, but it's how it always goes. Except it's not how it went last time around. And there were people this time who were saying, this is going to be a period of lawsuits, there's going to be so much fraud, we're going to have to be fighting to investigate the votes and everything. And then, last time we did not have a normal transition where outgoing members of the administration, had long detailed meetings and strategy sessions and tabletop exercises with the incoming. Is it different this time around, now that the Democrats are handing power back to the Republicans?
Yeah, one of the things that Donald Trump did it when he lost the previous election is he filed a slew of lawsuits. He did not want to leave the White House, and his team did not cooperate. That broke the mold. But the Trump administration broke the mold in a lot of things. The difference now is Trump is the winner. He's the president-elect, and the outgoing administration has accepted the results of the election. He's not challenging the results of the election and is pledging to cooperate. So, there's not as much bad feelings, if you will. One of the things that President Biden said yesterday, which he has said often, is you cannot love your country only when you win. In other words, he was pointing out that's in a not so subtle fashion, that's not what happened when Trump lost, that he created all kinds of issues and therefore did not cooperate with the transition. And also that the Democrats do accept the results of the election and they do love their country even though they lost. One of the things that the White House press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, said to us yesterday, she said, we understand that some people are celebrating and we would have liked a different outcome for my team, she said, our team, she said. And I understand that a lot of people are heartbroken, but we will follow the democratic process and we will have a peaceful transition.
One thing I do want to ask you about in just 3 minutes left. We have talked a lot about Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin in the past year. He and Senator Tammy Duckworth have been central to a lot of national discussions. But now Durbin is losing the judiciary chairmanship that he waited his entire career for. He and Duckworth will be in the minority. Talk about what effect you've seen that move from majority to minority have on other politicians you've covered over the years.
Well, it certainly makes the minority's job a lot harder. And it makes them fight even harder. And I think that Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth are the people for the job when it comes to fighting hard. They have been reelected by the people of the state, and they have been admired, and they have done a very good and very hard work for their people. I don't see that changing in any way, but they understand that now they have some headwinds. It is good to be in the majority. It is not so good to be in the minority in the U.S. Senate, but it's not as bad as it is in the House, because in the Senate, every state gets equal representation, and in the House, it's based on the population. So the worst job in Washington, by the way, in case you were wondering, is House Minority Leader, not Senate Minority Leader, because the Senate, still the minority has rights. And in the House, the rights can very easily be flattened, for lack of another way of putting it, by the majority. Of course, there's two bodies in the legislative system. And so, you know, they sort of, you know, weigh the pros and cons on each side. But it's going to be harder for them. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to work harder to meet that challenge.
I don't know. With all the norms we've seen destroyed in the last 8 years, I wonder how much longer Senate minority rights are going to continue to be a thing. Just a minute left. You know, for a lot of us, Washington is an abstract idea. It's a word. It's an epithet some politicians use. For you, it's a place to live. And I understand that there's been tension in Washington, anticipating what this, you know, interregnum might have looked like had the election gone a different way. What is the environment around the city? In just about 30, 45 seconds left.
I would say leading up to the election, there was a lot of concern that there would be riots in the streets based on a lot of the inflammatory statements that were made and based on, if past is prologue, the riot at the Capitol. Fencing went up within several blocks of the Capitol building and the White House, and stores were boarded up, and they still remain there as recently as yesterday. There were no riots in the streets. There was no discontent. There was disappointment. But disappointment is something completely different than acting out and, wielding batons or flags or shields and the kind of rioting that we saw, for example, on January 6th. It was very peaceful.
Linda Kenyon, I hope it continues to be peaceful for you. And I hope you get some rest this weekend. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.